Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. I am here once more with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. Good to see you again, Chief Simpson.
Great. Thank you for having me. We've got some exciting and important issues to discuss today.
The first one is the Alto High Speed Rail. What is the Alto High Speed Rail project?
Well, that's a good question. I think there hasn't been enough confirmation of exactly what the high speed rail is. I know originally it was being sold as the high frequency weight rail through VIA, but it has since been renamed the Alto and High Speed. And it's going to be a high speed corridor of 300 kilometers an hour trains from Toronto all the way to Quebec City, with about five or six stops along the way, including Peterborough.
There are several routes that are going close to Trent Hills and one that goes north of Highway 7. What has got you most concerned about the routes?
Well, the routes themselves, we are not sure where they're going to go. They painted a very broad picture of where they're going to go. We know the cities that are involved, but the actual route hasn't been chosen yet. Our issue is that it's going to sever and create two different environmental zones where animals won't be able to navigate across these paths. They might have some corridors for the animals, but ultimately we're looking at a complete change in the ecosystem and natural habitats and migrations of all the animals that are there. So for First Nations and anyone who's hunting and enjoys nature, this is going to be a major issue in terms of the disruption to the natural cycles.
So why are you concerned, since this project website states that it is dedicated to the engagement of Indigenous people? Why are you getting your oar in this water?
Well, it's very interesting that that they would say that, because we haven't quite seen that yet. We've been discussing with the other township mayors, and we all seem to be in the same boat, where there hasn't been enough information shared, there hasn't been enough consultation, and we really aren't being told why this project is so important.
Now, you've already mentioned that you're in the same boat as other opponents to this, and that is there's been a real lack of information. Yet there are also concerns that are unique to Indigenous people. Can you talk a bit about the concerns that you, as representative of an Indigenous group, what are your concerns?
My concerns are a lack of benefit overall to our treaty territory, to our the First Nations of the Williams Treaty territory. We usually like to see if the benefit will outweigh the negative effects. And right now, we're finding it hard to find any benefits. We see the cost, and it's a natural cost, but we don't see the benefits. We see benefits for people in Toronto. We see benefits for people in Montreal. And then other than that, like we don't see a lot of benefits for the First Nations.
Now, the project's website says it's committed to building meaningful relationships with Indigenous peoples. That sounds pretty positive.
It would, if that's what was happening. It's one thing to state something and say something. It's another thing to actually go through with it and to be committed to a process like that.
But the project's website says it will contribute to better socioeconomic benefits, creating mutually beneficial socioeconomic opportunities for Indigenous groups. It sounds like they want to share the economic benefits. Is that not a good thing?
It would be a good thing if we were told what that would look like, if we had started the conversations about that, and if they had a plan to share with us. But as of right now, we've pretty much been hearing crickets. Williams Treaty First Nations haven't really been consulted as a distinct group. We've sort of been lumped in together with several Indigenous stakeholders, and it's almost like they don't understand fully what the Williams Treaty territory entails, which is basically Toronto to Ottawa.
So it wouldn't matter which route it was, they should be consulting. Is that correct?
Yes, there should have been early and robust consultation. I met with the vice president of Aalto a couple of years ago in Montreal. It was the high frequency rail via company back then, but we didn't really get down into the nitty gritty. It was just more of a meet and greet, and I wouldn't call it consultation.
It also promises to fulfill the duty to consult. Now, this is something that we've often talked about here, and it says, and I'm quoting now, where appropriate, accommodating Indigenous people, including through the impact assessment process, with the aim of securing free, prior, and informed consent. Isn't that something you've raised before? And why is this not good enough?
Well, the impact assessment is a very good tool to use, but it's certainly not the only way to consult with First Nations. It's a way to understand what the cost is naturally and economically to the territory. But consultation is far greater than just an impact assessment. We need to see that consultation up front. We need to see what the costs of the project are. We need to see what the alternatives are. Like, they haven't told us, like, why aren't the alternatives like the existing via rail lines or something else that's less intrusive and less destructive to the territory. I'd like to see why those haven't been looked at more seriously, and if they have, what were the results of that study?
In October of 2023, a report was generated by this group on the topic of Indigenous inclusion. It identified 40 Indigenous communities and organizations impacted by the proposed high-speed rail project at that time. Do you know if you or your people were involved at that point?
Yes, so our consultation team joined one of these meetings. It didn't go very well because we were lumped in with a lot of other Indigenous groups, some that we weren't even sure should have been in the meeting. And there was no distinction given to the fact that we were the territorial treaty rights holders of the main section of the route. There's seven First Nations that have the treaty territorial rights for the entire Toronto to Ottawa section, which is the largest section. And there was no special accommodations or treatment of the Williams Treaty First Nations. So the problem with that is they can say that they are fulfilling the consultation, the duty to consult process, but it's actually up to the First Nations to sign off on whether the duty to consult has been met.
When did you first learn about this most recent version of the project?
Well, it's I was referring to it as the high frequency rail for quite some time, and then all of a sudden they're like, well, we're talking about the high speed rail now. And I was like, what do you mean? And then it just turns out that it was a rebranding, and I guess the high frequency rail was a bit more palatable to people in terms of the verbiage than high speed rail. But really, they just came out and said, yes, this is a high speed rail project, and they have the new group that's going to try to take it forward. But again, like, we haven't seen the results of any good consultation.
What steps are being taken by Alderville as it is coming close to your location? Are you seeking any comments from the band council or consulting with residents?
Yes, so this is been a discussion in our weekly consultation council meeting. We also discussed it at the most recent council meeting, and it's something we are going to discuss with the community at our community meeting on March 28th. Again, we just don't have enough information to make an informed opinion, and once I think our citizens see that we haven't been given the information to make a decision, they're going to see this as a very skeptical project, something that, we are purposely perhaps being left in the dark so that we cannot make that informed decision. And we just don't feel that the trust is there to support this project.
There was a meeting in Peterborough in late February about the project. Was anyone from Alderville in attendance or even notified?
I think a couple of our members went as private citizens, but there was no effort to reach out to us specifically.
I am aware, though, that some municipalities are working to get Aalto to come to a local meeting to hear concerns. Is there any plan to have the project consultants come to Alderville to participate in a community meeting?
Well, absolutely. That's the whole gist of the duty to consult requirements. The proponent is supposed to come and visit and talk to our citizens. So we're still waiting for them to come. We've been reaching out to them, asking for more information. We aren't getting it. So it's pretty much the opposite of duty to consult right now. So it's interesting that they would be touting DTC as what they're doing.
Would you attend a nearby municipal meeting as an alternative?
I would, just for information purposes, but that's not the process that's laid out in the law. I shouldn't have to go to and seek out this information wherever it's found. They are legally bound to come to us to present this.
Are you working collaboratively with other reserves or Anishinaabe groups, as I know you do in other projects?
Yes, so we've been discussing this with the four Mississaugi First Nations of Hiawatha, Curve Lake, and Scugog Island. We also have spoken a little bit about it with the three Chippewa, which is Georgina Island, Beausoleil, and Rama. So I can't speak for them, but this is something that the next time all seven Williams Treaty First Nations meet, this will be high on the priority list of discussion.
Are you prepared to work with other groups, such as farmers' organizations or municipalities, to make your case?
I think at this point we'd be working with any of the stakeholders right now. I don't see this as a regular duty to consult issue. This is something that spans a very large section of territory. It's something that's going to do a lot of damage to several municipalities and counties and groups, farmers, as well as hunters. So I think we need to have a united voice that is speaking for the negative impacts that a project like this might cause.
Do you take any solace in the fact that this is one of the nation-building projects that Prime Minister Mark Carney has promised to center Indigenous consultations at the, and I'm quoting from him now, heart of these upcoming projects?
Well, I actually met with the Major Projects Office last week, where Aalto was the primary discussion, and we let them know our concerns of the project. In terms of solace, I would say that it means that there's a larger microscope on the project. Perhaps there's a little bit more attention paid to it by the Crown. Again, like we still need to have that information to make a decision. If Aalto came to me and said, these are all the benefits we're going to offer to the area, to the First Nations, then I'd have something positive to share with you today. But the fact that they haven't come to us yet with any solid plan or any benefits, then there's really nothing to talk about in terms of benefits.
The deadline for online consultation has been extended by a month until April 24th. Does that make a difference to you or your community? Mm-hmm.
The duty consults requirement for First Nations is outside of, say, the regular community consultation process. So for a project like this, we would be consulted with and engaged with throughout the duration of all stages of the project.
I'd like to move on to another topic, the Northumberland County Roads Project. I understand Alderville and Northumberland County are looking at a collaboration in designing the roads and sidewalks along County Road 45 through the heart of the community. Can you share with us what's going on?
Yes, so this is a very exciting potential partnership and project that we have on the horizon. So, as many people who've been in the area for a long time, they know that the 45, especially through Alderville, has gone through a lot of growth and development. Back in the 50s and 60s, it was basically a rural route. There were some farm fields. There was an occasional home, but generally, it was basically a country highway. But now we have stores. We have storefronts, we have restaurants, we have homes, and lots of different community-oriented buildings and facilities. But we still have a highway roadside that is rural. So we're looking at how do we bring that up? How do we meet the people that are walking from work, from their homes? Something that's a bit safer for people, something that's going to tell the drivers that, hey, you're coming through a town that has different requirements of the road.
Now, County 45 is a major road, and it's used to be a provincial secondary highway a long time ago. In terms of the reserve, how has the function of this section of road changed over the years? You've mentioned it a bit, but I'm just wondering, is it like a main street in a town, or how would you describe it for people who may not be familiar with it?
I would call this a main street. So, if there was a main street, Alderville, this would be it. And in fact, I'm looking at the window right now, and there's a pedestrian walking down the 45. He's unfortunately has to walk right on the highway because of the snowbanks. So, the cars will now have to avoid him. So, this gives an example of why we need to make these changes. It would be great to have a sidewalk here and there. And, just something that's that shows that we sort of are at the point now where we aren't that rural little town anymore. Because in the old days it was great for transportation to get to, say, Toronto or Peterborough. But now we have a lot of folks from those places coming to us. So we want to make it nice for them so that they can pull in, park, having a turning lane instead of having to stop all the 45 traffic each time someone wants to turn into one of our businesses or homes. So we want a road system that reflects where we are today and not where we were like 70 years ago.
Now, you've mentioned a number of features that would be nice to have. You mentioned sidewalks. You just talked about turning lanes. I mean, you walk into any downtown in, say, Port Hope or Cobourg or Brighton or Campbellford, there's street lights. Sometimes there's flower boxes and benches. What other things are you looking at in terms of amenities to add to this to give it a flavor of being a main street?
Let's see. I would say if they did widen the roads, those turning lanes would be great. Curbing would be excellent because right now, when it rains, the water kind of just chooses any path to flow down. It might wash out your driveway, or it might cause big puddling on your front lawn. So curbs would be a natural way to control where that water is flowing, so you can get it to go in the proper spots. That would save our residents and businesses all kinds of time from having to repair that damage. So maybe some street painting as well too, that more accurately reflects what's happening. Signage saying, "Oh, watch out for best pedestrians or children at play." I guess maybe even sewers. It'd be great if we could have that stormwater pushed somewhere else. That's less damaging for the area. But right now we're open to all sorts of discussions with the county on what we can do. And of course, the most important thing is to engage our citizens about how what they want and what their needs are for the 45.
Well, that kind of follows up to the question I wanted to ask now, which is about how does the community relate to this stretch of road? We know people outside the community driving through what it's like, but for the people who live there, how do they view this stretch of road?
Well, it's I think it's viewed very dangerously. I live on the 45. When I first moved here, the speed limit was anywhere from 70 to 80 kilometers an hour. So that means people were going over 100 right past my house. So if my kids were out in the yard playing and a car were to, say, skid off the road, like that would be the end of them. So I didn't allow my kids to play in the front yard just for that reason. I've had many cars fly into my front yard, take out trees, and they're quite rude once they land. They act like it's my fault that they crash into my property. So it's been a very tricky situation. We've had a number of pedestrian hits. Unfortunately, a couple of years ago, we had a community member who was killed on the 45. We've had lots of accidents, fatal accidents on this stretch. So once we moved the speed limit down to 50, that made a bit of a positive change. But you still see cars going crazy, especially at nighttime. You'll just hear them go by in a whiz.
What is the role the county is playing in this project? Is it not responsible for this roadway?
It is responsible, but ultimately it's the driver who's using the roadway that's the most responsible. The county can have rules. The county can help with signage and stop signs. They can meet with us to hear our concerns. But when it comes right down to it, it's the driver. And if the driver's driving down a highway that looks like a rural highway, and there's no indications that it's like a vibrant community with businesses and commercial developments, then there's still going to treat it like a rural highway. So we do need those markings, those indicators that you have come into a town that there's increased safety measures.
So then, how does this collaboration with the county work? Since you've described what you guys want, but obviously the county has its responsibilities in this area, how are you guys working together then?
Well, I guess back in 2019, when I was on council, we met with the county, and this is the first time we first brought a lot of these issues to their attention. So from then, we started basically partnering and ensuring that this is a issue that's near the front of our discussions. So they worked very well with us. They've met with us recently to go over what's needed, and they're letting us decide as a community what we would want the most. So they have a lot of suggestions, but they really want to know what we want and what our people want for the 45. So they've been very open and willing to accommodate us and our concerns.
So what's the timeline going forward, and are there going to be any consultations with the community?
I'm not sure if we have a timeline yet. As long as we're heading in the right direction, it could be 1 year, it could be 3 years, it could be 5 years. To me, as long as it gets done, ideally the sooner the better. That's the thing. But we will be discussing again probably at the March 28th community meeting about this. But we do hope to have a more intensive, long-term engagement with the community to hear their concerns. We hear a lot from just people conversationally telling us what they think, but it'd be great if we had some sort of a questionnaire survey so that we can put those opinions to stats.
I'd like to move on to another story that is pretty significant on many levels, and that is Don Smoke's 100th birthday.
Oh my goodness. So Don Smoke is a dear treasure of Alderville First Nation. He was a World War II veteran. He joined the forces when he was 17 years old. He was underage and he was sent off to the European theater. So when his 100th birthday was on the horizon, say about a year ago, we said we have to do something big for him. So his family took over the planning and coordination with our community center staff, and they really dressed up the community center in a way that I've never seen it before. It was fantastic. It was almost like it wasn't the regular CC anymore. It was something special, and it really was. To me, I think it's the greatest event we've ever had at the community center. We had the Grand Chief, Linda DeBosigi of Anishinaabeg Nation, was in attendance. The Deputy Grand Chief, Christopher Plain, was there. We had Chief Lori Carr from Hiawatha. We had Chief Kelly LaRocca from Scugog Island. We had Deputy Chief Jeff Jacobs from Curve Lake. So we had all of our partners there. And of course, the house was packed. It was just great to spend the day with Don, sharing stories. Everyone got to meet him. Like, he was the most popular person in the world, it seemed at the time. So it was just such a wonderful day.
I understand there was a special Royal Canadian Air Force flyover for this. Is that true?
Yes, there were a lot of highlights that day, but I think that was probably the biggest highlight. So we knew that they were coming on the nose. I can't remember the exact hour, but they came exactly when they were expecting. So we emptied the community center out. So everyone was standing in the parking lot and looking up. And sure enough, it flew right over quite low. I'm not sure how many feet up, but it looked like maybe 300 feet or something is my guess. But it flew slow, and it was quite a sight. So it was quite an honor to have the Air Force show their respect to Don that way.
Don Smoke represents a pivotal generation of Indigenous service members. Can you tell us a bit about his significance in that role?
Yes, so for both world wars, Alderville sent pretty much every able-bodied man to the war. In World War I, we just sent so many people. We had, I think, seven warriors who did not return. So we built a monument between World War I and World War II for those veterans. And then once we had World War II and sent off so many other young men and women to the battlefield, we incorporated those sacrifices in our cenotaph, which you see when you're coming up the 45, the long tower, the big big structure. That's in honor of our World War I and World War II veterans, of which Don Smoke is our last one.
I understand there was another person who turned 100. Can you tell us about this?
Yes, so Vivian Saunders, who currently lives in Toronto, turned 100 on March 10th. So this is 2 weeks after Dawn. So I was actually visiting with Vivian yesterday. She has a very nice house. She had very fond memories of Alderville, which she left Alderville when she was about 18 years old, she said, but she still knew everybody. She knew my grandparents and great grandparents. So it was quite lovely sitting with her for an hour or so that we were there. Just a lovely lady who I hope she's listening now and she knows how much of an impact she had on myself.
Can you share with us the significance of these elders in the community that are reaching this age and how they impact Alderville?
Well, I'm not sure if it's something in the water, but we have an inordinate amount of people in their 90s and now approaching 100. Vivian's younger sister, Gloria, is 98. Counselor Lisa McDonald's father is 98 years old. And we have quite, I'm going to say, at least a dozen people in their 90s. And we're looking forward to lots of 100th birthday parties coming up in the near future. We were talking about independent elders who still enjoy life to the fullest. So I'm not quite sure what's special about Alderville, but we do seem to have that longevity streak in us.
But how about the relationship between, say, the young people and families and just having these members around and what they bring to the overall culture of the community?
I do see a strong connection between our elders and our youth. I know a lot of our elders have either favorite grandkids or just a youth who's really connected with that elder in a certain way. And you'll see them pushing their wheelchair or accompanying them out to events, just ensuring that they can still participate. And at the same time, those elders are sharing their experience and their knowledge of Alderville and even traditional knowledge with these youth. So it's a way of passing down the history of our community and that even that technical know-how of how things went back in the 30s and the 40s. Like it was a much different world back then. It's hard for us today to fathom the kinds of things that our elders had to do in the day.
Now comes one of our favorite aspects of our conversations. Do you have any public service announcements for us?
I certainly do. First of all, I want to give a big shout out to our little NHL team, our Alderville under 18 team. It's the very first time that Alderville has submitted a Alderville standalone team in 26 years, I believe it is. So their first game is today, actually. So I'm wishing them well. But we have several other hockey players that are in different teams for different First Nations. And I would also like to announce that the Alderville and the Mississauga Nations have officially launched our Mississauga-led impact assessment of the Wesleyville nuclear site. So I want to put all of our members on notice that we are coming to get your opinions. We want to know what you think about the Wesleyville site. So you're going to find surveys and questionnaires coming out, and please, please let us know what you think. On April 9th, Alderville member Morris Switzer has a book reading and book signing at Lakefield College School. And the title of his book, it's a novel, it's called Sons of Tecumseh, and that's going to be in the Brian Jones Theater. He's a lovely gentleman. I've known him for probably 30 years. He's an excellent writer and elder. On April 25th at the Alderville Health and Social Service, they are hosting the annual health fair at the ACC from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the title of this year's health fair is Walking the Path of Wellness. Big thank you to all of our health and social services staff who are hosting that. And finally, it's a little bit further out there. On May 7th, we have an Indigenous Community Cancer Screening Day. And this is happening at Lake Ridge Health in Oshawa. And we are providing transportation to our members to Oshawa. For that very important cancer screening. And that's running all day from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And that's our announcements.
Chief Tanner Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Tanner Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Tanar Simpson.